Welcome to International Edition. I'm Susan Yockey in Washington. Ahead, our correspondent in Brussels talks about the suspects in Tuesday's bombings. President Obama and U.S. candidates speak out about the violence. An author finds strengths for today's U.S. candidates in a past politician.
He will basically say to his constituents, I'm not going to do what I think you want me to do because it's wrong. And my obligation to you is to do what's right.
And singer Meghan Trainor just says no. It's right here on The Voice of America. Belgian authorities continue searching for suspects responsible for Tuesday's airport and metro bombings in Brussels, which killed at least 31 people and wounded 271 others. The Belgian federal prosecutor spoke before the news media today, and joining us on the line with details is correspondent Heather Murdoch in Brussels. Welcome, Heather.
Hi, Susan.
Say, what did the prosecutor have to say about this case?
Well, the prosecutor said that there are raids being conducted all over the country, and they have found explosive devices and Islamic State flags connected to two people they confirmed were, they do believe to be two of the suicide bombers. They are the two brothers seen on a that's circulating on the internet of three suspected attackers. They also said that this morning's reports that came through the local media that there was a third suspect in custody is no longer the case. They are still searching for the third man in that picture. Other things that were found were an actual suicide, not a suicide note, sorry, a will from one of the bombers that has been that was killed in the attack, and goodbye note.
And this is linked to the bombings we had in France.
Yes. I mean, it's not entirely confirmed that it's linked, but there is a lot of evidence pointing to that it could that it is linked. For example, one of the bombers in France was arrested in Belgium just 4 days before the bombing here. And some of the information that was uncovered over the past 24 hours indicates that there the timing of the attack could have been related to his arrest. Also, there has been evidence that crosses over between both cases, the Paris attacks and the Brussels attacks, that indicate that some of the same people could have been involved. And finally, both attacks were claimed by the Islamic State as their responsibility.
What do we know specifically about these two brothers that they suspect were the suicide bombers?
Well, they were believed to be connected to Abdel Salam, and they are Belgian. We don't know a whole lot of more details about them at this time, but there are details unfolding as the police are investigating.
Heather, how would you describe the atmosphere there in Brussels one day after this tragedy?
Well, I think the city is in mourning. We are outside today during a moment of silence, and there's makeshift memorial set up and people gathering. And you see a lot of people crying and a lot of people outraged and just sad. And also some of the people I've talked to have expressed the fact that they are also scared because the question is this a one-time thing? Is this over or are there going to be more attacks?
Is there anger at the government? Do people feel like they didn't do enough to prevent this attack?
I haven't heard a lot of outright anger at the government, but I have heard some complaints that while security seems to be working, that they're not working hard enough because obviously the attacks happened, and that the security forces in Belgium, the complaint is, are not prepared to fight terrorism because it's generally such a peaceful place.
Is there a sizable Muslim community there in Brussels?
Yes, there is a sizable Muslim community. I'm not exactly sure of the percentage, though.
Do people hold it against the Muslim community when they see these terrorist attacks?
Interestingly enough, out today at the memorial, we saw a lot of Arab people or women in Muslim headscarves. It seemed to me that the a larger percentage than you normally see on the street during the day. It seemed to me that perhaps these were people coming out to show their solidarity and to show that being Muslim doesn't mean you're interested in any kind of violence. There has been some over the past few months as the violence in Europe has scared a lot of people. There has been some backlash, particularly towards refugee communities where people are afraid that refugee communities are related to the attacks. But so far there hasn't been any proof that refugees are in any way related to these recent attacks.
Well, thank you very much, Heather. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
President Obama, visiting Argentina, spoke out today about the violence in Belgium. And joining us here in the studio with details is Senior National Affairs Correspondent Jim Malone. Welcome, Jim.
Hi, Susan.
Say, what has the president had to say today? I know he talked about it yesterday as well, but what was the new stuff today?
Well, there was a joint news conference with the Argentinian president, and Mr. Obama reiterated that fighting the Islamic State is his number one priority. He pledged the United States will pursue the jihadist group until it's destroyed. So the president went out of his way, I think, to make a forceful statement, perhaps in response to some of the political complaints yesterday from some of the Republican contenders who said he wasn't taking it seriously enough. This has been a constant narrative in the Republican campaign that the president has not taken the threat of Islamic State strongly enough.
And nothing from the Democratic camp as far as criticizing the president, I presume.
No, but they've been busy. No, they definitely haven't been criticizing the president. They've been criticizing some of the Republican contenders who have talked about how to handle Islamic State in the wake of these terrible attacks in Brussels. And one of the comments made by Texas Senator Ted Cruz was that in the United States, that police should secure and patrol Muslim neighborhoods, which has sparked quite a bit of controversy in the campaign. That's been denounced by both Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders on the Democratic side. But even John Kasich, another Republican contender, said that we need to refocus the fact that we're fighting radical Islam, not Islam writ large. And then, of course, we have the case of the Republican frontrunner, Donald Trump, who reemphasized that this shows we need a ban on Muslims coming into the country to secure the nation.
There was a lot of controversy about him saying that, and I heard that he retracted it a bit later on.
Well, you know, Trump these days, I think, is trying to present himself as a little bit more of a moderate face right now. He's been in Washington part of the week trying to win over some establishment Republicans who are so far not taken in by the fact that he appears on his way to the Republican nomination. He has just won the primary in Arizona. Ted Cruz won in Utah, so the delegate count is still fairly close between the two of them, but Trump is on course to have clearly the most delegates by the time the convention gets into Cleveland, Ohio in July.
That's a little complicated. Maybe you'd explain for myself and our listeners what it is about how the Republican Party, some of them, are fighting their own possible front-running candidate, Trump.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. It's not going away right now. This is the interesting thing. Usually at this point in our electoral process, if you have a front-runner in one of the parties, they begin the process of coalescing supporters. Even those who were against them earlier may come to their side. But there's a stubborn resistance to Donald Trump among some members of the Republican establishment. I should say that because others, I think, over time will come to the realization he's the likely nominee and will get behind him. But there seems to be a group that's stubbornly opposed. Some of them are hardcore conservatives, and some of them are talking about actually running a third-party alternative, a conservative candidate that would take on Trump in the general election as well as the Democratic nominee, most likely Hillary Clinton. Now, Trump has said, you go ahead and do that. If you do that, it's going to result in the election of Hillary Clinton.
Is there still the possibility that when we go to the convention, the Republican convention, that they'll be able to not vote Trump in from the beginning?
Well, there's still a possibility in this sense that Trump may not get to the convention with enough delegates to claim the nomination outright. He needs 1,237. He's in the 700 range now. And it depends on how well he does the rest of the way in the primaries. Some of the primaries are winner-take-all states. Some are not. So Ted Cruz and John Kasich will continue to compete. They may be able to take some delegates away from Trump. The more they take away from Trump, the more likely it is Trump will not have that 1,237 number he needs. Therefore, you get to Cleveland, you actually have to have ballots to choose a nominee. We did this for hundreds of years in the U.S., but in recent time, usually the nominee gets to the convention. They've already are known who they are, and they have enough votes in the pocket. But the more ballots that may be required in Cleveland could lead to some other figures coming into play, or could lead to Trump losing support. So Trump, by the way, is already warning the Republicans that if he's not the nominee, if he has the most votes, but he's not the nominee, he's saying there could be riots among his supporters. He's not saying he would encourage that, but his people may not be controlled. So there's a lot swirling here in terms of the Republican race.
Well, thank you very much, Jim. Appreciate it.
You bet.
This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Back in 2011, NASA's Kepler Space Telescope captured two red supergiant stars as they exploded into supernovae. Astronomers studying the Kepler data were able to not only watch both stars as they exploded, but for the first time spot the tremendous shockwave produced deep inside the smaller of the two as its core collapsed. Called KSN 2011A, the smaller supernova is only 700 million light-years away from us and is nearly 300 times the size of our sun. The other, called KSN 2011D, is located 1.2 billion light-years away and had 500 times the solar mass of the sun. The supernova shockwave is described as resembling a nuclear explosion on a massive scale. The astronomers say that their observations will help scientists better understand how the earliest moments of a star's explosive death is affected by its makeup and size. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Time for a look at what's going on the web today concerning the Belgium bombings. And joining me with the details is social media reporter Andrew Palcheski. Welcome, Andrew.
Thank you very much. Well, there is criticism against President Obama on social media in the wake of these Brussels attacks. People saying, well, he kept going with this Cuba trip. He's now in Argentina. He should have gone home, or he should have gone to Brussels. Other people in social media pointing out that President Obama being in Brussels right now, security-wise, probably isn't the best move. And also,
no, it could really interfere with the security they have going. Anyway, president comes in, he's got to have people undercover, he's got to have limousines, he's got to have all this other stuff. That could really cause more havoc.
Exactly. But the breaking news now on social media is that Secretary of State John Kerry is reportedly going to head to Brussels on Friday. So there will be a representative of the U.S. government there. Now, as I mentioned, President Obama has continued from his Cuba trip onto Argentina. So hashtag Obama in Argentina is trending with those comments that he made that defeating ISIS is my top priority. So lots of people talking about that. And also Michelle Obama is trending. She was speaking in Buenos Aires, talking about some women's issues, support for women entrepreneurs, women students. And so her name is trending also as she makes that trip, and the first daughters as well make that trip to Argentina.
Well, they must be excited about that.
Absolutely. And I think social media is, too. Anytime you see the president, first lady go abroad, especially for a historic trip like the one to Cuba, you see a lot of social media activity, sharing a lot of the pictures and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. Well, thank you very much, Andrew, for stopping by.
Yeah, thank you very much.
This is time for our next piece of music here. Coming up on International Edition, a former U.S. politician might be a help to modern candidates. And some girlfriend advice? Just say no. Americans are seeking a new leader. The nation is going through the long process of choosing nominees to run for president. Candidates debate and meet with the public and tour the country for rallies and speeches. Author James Traub can tell us about one politician who repeatedly risked his political career to defend his principles. And the professor joins us on the line to talk about his book, John Quincy Adams' Militant Spirit, and the current race for the White House. Welcome, James.
Happy to be here.
Thank you. What would you say were the strongest political assets of the sixth president of the United States?
Well, unfortunately, his strongest assets weren't political. That was his problem. His strongest assets were that, first of all, he was a person of unbelievable mental gifts. He was just a super smart person who spoke half a dozen languages or so, probably had almost all of Shakespeare, almost all of Homer, almost all of the English classics at his fingertips. I mean, just a person you would have been astonished to talk to. A deep sense, overwhelming sense of public commitment. I mean, he was a man who was quite willing, I mean, as you said in your introduction, to risk his political future. He was willing to risk his life. And on any number of occasions, for example, when he was the target of innumerable death threats after he was president when he came back to the Congress and he really stood up against the slave power. And I've read all these letters that were written to him that contain explicit death threats of the sort that I will come next week and shoot you with a gun in the street there. And he did nothing whatsoever to change his habits, nothing. So that sense of heightened public service.
How is Adams relevant to today's American political scene?
You know, I have to say in a kind of reverse way, because I would never say, and I didn't, when I wrote the book, set out to say, he will remind you of blank, whether you the blank is someone else whose father was a president like Jeb Bush, or whether he's like Barack Obama. If anything, you know, he was an archaic figure even in his own time, and certainly he is in many ways today. So when we look at his virtues and we look at his flaws, we see something unfamiliar, but I think something that reminds us of other ways of being. I mean, his utter indifference to the political costs of what he did, it merited him the first chapter of John F. Kennedy's Profiles in Courage, and Kennedy used Adams' life to talk about political courage. Well, it's not easy to think of a figure today who would so utterly, who would basically say to his constituents, I'm not going to do what I think you want me to do because it's wrong, and my obligation to you is to do what's right. But I think as we look for people who don't purely think about the world in polling terms, and we feel have a kind of North Star of firm conviction, I don't think anyone can be held to Adams' impossible standards, and it needs to be said for that reason, for the reason of his stubbornness, he wasn't a very effective president. We probably need people, more people like, say, I think of someone like Bill Clinton, who was more Machiavellian. And yet, those old Republican, and I mean that with a small r, virtues, that is, of a world that wasn't really fully democratic with a small d, it wasn't really about popular democracy, and Adams felt like, I serve the public well, therefore I should become president, in a way that nobody would ever say today. But those were incredibly firm convictions that allowed him to stand up for principles, even when he felt that he was all alone. It allowed him to be an unshakable figure.
The name of your book again?
Yes, the name of my book is Militant Spirit, and he was a militant spirit.
John Quincy Adams. Well, thank you very much for speaking with us today.
A pleasure, Susan.
This is VOA.
Health news and notes. This is Living Better.
There's no certain way to prevent dementia in individuals. We might be able to reduce the numbers of people perhaps by 10, maybe 20, maybe even 30%.
That's Dr. Simon Ridley with Alzheimer's Research UK talking about a new study that concludes that exercise and healthful eating habits can dramatically decrease the risk of getting dementia. The conclusion seems like common sense to people on the streets of London.
It doesn't surprise me because I can even tell from a personal point of view that exercise and healthy eating makes me feel so much better.
If you get plenty of exercise and keep your mind active, you will sort of stave off dementia and Alzheimer's, things like that.
Some 45 million people worldwide are living with dementia, a number that is expected to nearly triple by 2050. There's no cure for it, but experts say that not smoking and staying active may help people to keep their minds healthy. I'm Martin Seacrest for VOA's Living Better.
Today in our music feature, we're going to revert to an old saying people used to say, what you should say when you are offered illegal drugs, and that is, just say no. And Larry London is here to explain what that has to do with the music world. Larry, welcome.
Well, it's nice to be back with you, Susan. Welcome back. It's been a few weeks.
Thank you.
Today we're talking about a brand new song from the 22-year-old Massachusetts native who just got the Grammy for Best New Artist. Her name is Meghan Trainor. She has her second album coming out this year. No release date yet, but it's called Thank You, the album. And the new song is a very different sound. It's Caribbean influenced. She was channeling Britney Spears and Madonna, and she herself confesses her inner Missy Elliott with this new song, which I love. It's called No. And I had predicted this song is going to go to number one. It's debuted at number 11 already on Billboard. Its first week, I predict this is a number one hit, just like her song, All About That Bass.
And what's she saying no to?
She is saying no. It's kind of a message for women. It's a women empowerment song. Meghan Trainor calls this her Beyonce Single Ladies hit. She says, this is for girls who are tired of being chased by guys. And when they ask for your phone number, they ask for your horoscope sign. Say no, 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 no. That's kind of what the message in the song is all about. No, say no to the guys.
My name is no, my sign is no, my number is no. You need to let it go, you need to let it go, need to let it go. First you gonna say you ain't running game.
Well, what else is on this album?
Well, we haven't heard much because all she's released is the single. Mm-hmm. The album hasn't come out, so she's teasing us with this new song. She has a new look. She has red hair for the first time in her life.
What did she have before?
She had blondish, brownish hair, and so now it's a color of red.
Maybe she should have said no to her hairdresser.
Very good for you. She's going off in a new direction, and I assume we'll see her on tour. She had to cut her tour short last year because of throat surgery. She had vocal issues.
Oh, that's serious.
Yes, it is. But she's back, and she sounds great. And by the way, this song, she says, was written out of anger. And I've heard her tell the story in interviews recently where she said that L.A. Reid, her boss at Epic Records, listened to the new album, the album Thank You, and said to her, there's no hit on this album. I don't hear a hit.
Well, that's mean.
It is mean. And so she left that very day, and out of anger and spite, she sat down and wrote the song, which is going to be a hit, is already a hit for that matter. The song is called No.
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 Okay. Thank you very much, Larry.
No.
And I don't say no to you. We would like to invite you to follow us on Twitter. You can find us at @VOA_IE. If you would like to listen to today's program again or any previous broadcast, please visit our website at voanews.com. Go to the Programs tab in the upper right-hand corner, then scroll on down to International Edition. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The ancient spring festival of Nowruz is currently being celebrated by millions of people around the world, including Iranians, Kurds, Afghans, Azeris, Americans, and the peoples of Central Asia. Secretary of State John Kerry sent his best wishes to them all for a happy, healthy, and prosperous new year. Nowruz, he said, is a time of renewal and reconciliation, a chance for families to celebrate their heritage and culture, reflect on the past 12 months, and look forward to the year ahead. In his Nowruz greeting, President Barack Obama again used the occasion to speak directly to the people of Iran.
Over the years, you've heard me say that the United States was prepared to engage with Iran in a spirit of mutual interest and mutual respect. Well, that's exactly what we did. In the last few years, our diplomats and nuclear scientists sat down together and negotiated face to face. And last summer, along with our international partners, we reached the historic deal on Iran's nuclear program.
President Obama noted that Iran has fulfilled key commitments under the deal, rolling back critical parts of its nuclear program and agreeing to verification measures to assure the world its nuclear program is and will remain peaceful. In return, the international community lifted certain sanctions on Iran.
Iran now has the opportunity to begin reintegrating itself with the global economy. That means more trade and investment, which will mean more jobs, including for young Iranians who dream of pursuing their careers and making their mark on the world.
President Obama stressed that the nuclear deal will not solve all the disputes between Iran and the United States. But even as our two governments continue to have serious disagreements, he said, the fact that we are now talking to each other on a regular basis for the first time in decades gives us an opportunity to solve other issues. In addressing the Iranian people, President Obama spoke of his historic trip this week to Cuba. My visit, he said, will be a reminder that, even after decades of mistrust, it is possible for old adversaries to start down a new path. As you and your families welcome the new spring this Nowruz, I hope that the friendship and ties between the American and Iranian people will continue to grow.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.